A busy day, wrapping up a busy week. Friday, March 15th, 2024 on Connecticut Today. We featured Connecticut Catholic Conference Executive Director Christopher Healy on a proposed measure based on gender that could alter the state's constitution. State Senate GOP leader Stephen Harding dropped by to talk about a new report from the Secretary of the State's office regarding more alleged voting irregularities in Bridgeport, while I also had some comments on that same issue. You to start the show.
I take it our next guest may be celebrating the green this weekend. Mr. Christopher Healy is joining us. Mr. Healy, do I take it that this is a celebratory weekend for you and St. Patrick's Day in some way, shape, or form?
Oh, we Irish sometimes call St. Patrick's Day amateur hour, but no, we always celebrate it on Sunday.
Yes. The short answer is yes, is what you're saying.
We glorify the saint who drove the snakes out of Ireland. So
there you go. Of course, Chris joins me in his official capacity on this show right now, as he often does. He's the executive director of the Connecticut Catholic Conference. We've spoken to Chris a couple times over the past few months about legislation proposed or otherwise. And coming up after all the revelry on St. Patrick's Day Sunday, Chris, I know you are turning your sights back on something pretty serious, and you asked me to come on today to let folks know, Catholic or otherwise, what is going to be happening pertaining to something you and the conference are concerned about at the state capitol. So fill us in. What's going on?
Well, I think, thank you, Paul, for having me on. For those listening in, a lot of times folks don't appreciate that we have an actual Connecticut constitution, a state constitution. And that constitution protects our rights as free citizens, along with the U.S. Constitution. Also guarantees a public education. That's the one thing that most people point to with the Connecticut Constitution. So when you try to amend the Constitution, the document, it's a process that's very serious and we think should rarely be used. And what the Connecticut legislators are doing, some legislators are doing, are proposing an amendment to the Constitution, which we think would radically alter life as we know it by creating what's called equal protection or divine right for people to have an abortion, but also would encompass people who exhibit gender identity issues, behavior otherwise. Mm-hmm. And this will create a whole different, almost parallel universe of values and completely restructure what the whole term gender means and sex means by creating this special new right. Now, we would argue in the Catholic Conference that, you know, men and women are created as they are in God's image. And also, if you don't take that as your guidepost, science says we have X and Y chromosomes to differentiate mm-hmm. ourselves from men and women. But this amendment would then, through the Constitution, say that someone who decides to wake up one morning through self-identity, who is biologically a man or decides to be a woman, well, all of that would now then be constitutionally protected and give them more equal rights than they would currently do. Currently, we do have laws that protect people from being discriminated against mm-hmm. based on their gender, the gender identity, et cetera. But this enshrines it in the Constitution and would then, let's say, for example, allow young men and young boys to play in girls' sports without any prohibition. It could have an impact on hiring practices. Mm-hmm. All of these things, which I don't think most people think is right, just, fair, or constitutional. In other words, you're in a way taking away equal protection law by creating a whole new class of citizens that's based on someone's interpretation of gender. And that is a very serious development.
And also, Chris, you're talking to somebody a couple of times in my media career. I've taken some side jobs, even when I was doing radio. I was a sports writer for both the New Haven Register years ago and also for the Danbury News Times, and I loved it, and I loved covering, for example, high school meets, state championships, in things like swimming and soccer and track and field, primarily girls. And, you know, I did radio play-by-play for Quinnipiac for women's basketball for years. And this is why, Chris Healy, I take a particular interest in this, and I'm so passionate about this. We're talking about something here that if what you say is accurate about this, would lay the table to further destroy, Chris, Title IX, which back in the 70s, old guys like you and I remember this, that was set up to say, hey, women deserve an equal and standard playing field for athletics here. And, Chris, just I recall back my days covering high school cross-country meets and swimming meets, and I cannot for the life of me perceive what would go through or what does go through a young woman in college or high school if they have to compete against and lose against a biological male. I'm sorry if people think I'm a Neanderthal, but that's just the way it is.
No, it's a matter of right and wrong, and there's nothing confusing about it. The issue here is that women have enjoyed Title IX protections, which have allowed them to pursue their dreams, scholarships, and just the thrill of competing and succeeding. That all could be washed away if this amendment were to be first adopted by the legislative branch, signed by the governor, and then put before the voters. Now, people will say, well, that'll never happen. Well, stranger things have happened in politics. Mm-hmm. And I would want to point out one thing. You talked about Title IX. Title IX is already under assault by the administration.
Yep.
They're issuing new guidelines which gender out of the definitions and gender identity. So that means that gender identity trumps gender under the new Title IX things if they're not stopped by our Congress. And that would, again, allow men, boys, to, if they identify as women without any sort of changes, just identify, to participate in sports, including contact sports. And I think you've been seeing stories from around mm-hmm. the areas, states, where this is happening, and women are getting hurt
and physically hurt,
badly hurt. And that is happening here in Connecticut in some areas. Not a lot of reporting has been going on about it. But at the primary and secondary school level, some of this is going on, and there is no way to enforce it. And that's one of the issues that the Catholic Conference and others were pushing this year, was to say, we need a standard state law that says for purposes of interscholastic sports, they should be reserved for the gender of origin. And that's that. 26 states do that. And there's also, we're pushing to get a law passed that if children go to school and exhibit gender dysphoria, in other words, they exhibit a gender other than their original, that parents be informed. Again, we don't have that mm-hmm. now in the state of Connecticut. It's all done by certain boards of ed and their policies. I'm all for local control, but this is a kind of an issue that I think supersedes that, and there has to be a standard. Because certain school districts, you know, compete against other school districts.
Yeah.
And Catholic schools compete against non-Catholic schools. And we have a set of religious beliefs that we think are threatened by this. We're also threatened by this amendment, because what this amendment will say, based on classifying equal protection for certain genders and gender identities, that our religious beliefs as Catholics could be superseded by the Constitution, or at least create an unending supply of lawsuits if we don't kowtow to what the secular whims of a constitutional amendment would bring. So there's religious freedom issues here. There's fairness issues. All this is very important. And on Monday, there will be a hearing on it, on this amendment.
Chris, you know as well as I do, there are likely some people in my audience right now here at 25 past 4 on a Friday saying, come on, Healy, this is transphobic. All you Catholics, you're transphobic. Don't hide behind safety in girls and women's sports. What would you say to those people?
Well, the issue here has nothing to do with transphobia. We're talking about the rights of people to live their lives and practice their religious freedoms. No one is asking people to be Catholic. No one's pressing anyone to follow our religion. We just want to be able to follow ours. And this amendment, by enshrining the Constitution, would supersede our religious freedoms on how we wish to conduct our lives without impugning on anyone else. that's what we're very concerned about. The issue that we just talked about having to do with transgender phobia or transphobia, you know, well, our focus has been on children, not adults. You know, you're an adult, you're after over 18, as long as, you know, you're free to do what you want with your life. But once you start giving special rights to people, that comes at the expense of others. And that's all we're saying that this amendment would do. We have laws that protect people, civil rights laws on the books that protect women and men and gay people and transgender people. But this amendment, what it would do is it would completely redefine gender and sexual orientation to the point where it would become an inalienable right. And most people say, what's the big problem there? Well, the big problem there is that that person can use that inalienable right to infringe on someone else's religious beliefs. And we don't, and by the way, just as a sort of a big picture point, now the Constitution is, you know, is an establishment document that is there to sort of, it's a foundational document. You know, you don't change your foundation of your house unless there's a real crack in the foundation.
Exactly. I say that all the time.
There is no public need to do something like this because there's no hole in the laws that protect people from abuse or discrimination. This is mostly politics. This is mostly to gin up one party's need on abortion. But they've now, the abortion part is also troubling because by making it a divine constitutional right, that removes what we call viability, meaning a certain number of months where an abortion can't be performed. This would, in essence, validate and legalize late-term abortion right up to the time of birth.
Chris Healy, thank
you. For all these reasons, obviously, we're concerned. We hope people get involved. It's Monday at 11:30, and again, just take an interest. Ask your legislator how they feel about it. And, we'll see where the debate takes.
All right, and Chris, keep us up to date on this once it passes on Monday. Any thoughts you have, I'll be here all next week. All right, Chris?
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Chris Healy there. He is the executive director of the Connecticut Catholic Conference, so we'll see if that proposed amendment to the state constitution. One big story, though, you may not have missed because we've been talking about it now for months. And sadly, it seems, at least at this point, to be rearing its head again. The Secretary of the State's office, Stephanie Thomas, announced today she's making a referral to the State Elections Enforcement Commission about some more alleged funny business in the latest round of Bridgeport elections. It was on February 27th. It was round four between Joe Ganim and John Gomes. Mr. Ganim, the incumbent mayor, winning all four rounds, two general elections and two primaries. But apparently now there may be, and again, we have to stress here, innocent until proven guilty, but there may be some other stuff here. We don't know. Joining us right now is the State Senate Republican leader, Steve Harding of Brookfield, to chime in on this. Hey, Steve, good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, good. It's great to be with you on a Friday. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Steve. Well, what do you think about this? Now, again, I've been saying all day in my show, Steve, and I think you realize it too, innocent until proven guilty. We don't have any names here. But, Steve, right. I was hoping, we against hope, that maybe we were past this, but maybe we are, maybe we aren't. But at least it's good to see, Steve, the Secretary of the State's office doing their job and saying, hey, there may have been additional funny business here.
Yeah. Well, you know, I do appreciate them coming out and saying something and referring this to the SEC for investigation. And as you mentioned, you know, until proven guilty or until further evidence is presented to us, it's hard to jump to certain assumptions. But, I mean, nevertheless, I mean, when you hear that allegation, it is extremely alarming and unfortunately is somewhat consistent with what we've seen out of Bridgeport in these elections lately. This highlights the fact even more as to why election reform, particularly as it in regards to protecting the integrity of our elections, is so critically important. We saw something just this past summer where it was clear as day on video, an individual in Bridgeport openly violating election laws. And so this is our opportunity, in my opinion, to finally address these issues, to bring back integrity to our elections, to give confidence to the voters that the votes that are being counted are true and accurate and legal. And this just, I think, again, highlights why that is so important and highlights that what has gone on in Bridgeport is just completely unacceptable.
The new allegations here, Steve, if I can just go over them again for my audience here, report. Now, again, these are allegations. Some voters saying they got absentee ballots despite not requesting them. A voter reported an individual arriving at his home to help with his ballot, had him sign unknown paperwork and took the ballot. A report of a campaign, doesn't say which one, offering cash in return for completed ballots, and some suspicious activity at drop boxes discovered during a review of more video footage from surveillance cameras. Now, Steve, I know things like video are being discussed in drop boxes, and I don't know what's going to happen in the end, but these new allegations here, I think, are even more of a roadmap here into trying to at least do something. Not everything's going to be perfect, but do something.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. I mean, it's to do something. Not everything is going to be perfect. You're not always going to be able to prevent everything, unfortunately. That's just the world that we live in today. However, there are some things that are just unacceptable. And one of the things that is unacceptable, in my opinion, is doing nothing. And far too often in our state, we've seen the state do nothing time and time again when it comes down to making the proper reforms that need to be made to provide our voters integrity in our elections and confidence in our election system here. And what has frustrated me is that, you know, this was on video just this past summer, and the majority party has been given so many opportunities to address that, whether it be amendments or proposals from individuals in my caucus, and it has been refused every single time. And a lot of the measures have not even moved forward this legislative session to restore some more protections and integrities in our election system. So that's been frustrating. But, you know, even more so than that, you know, Paul, is that, you know, what we want to see, you know, the Secretary of State's made their statement. The SEC hopefully is going to do a diligent job in investigating this. But I'd like to hear more going forward about what has gone on with these investigations. You know, for far too often, the complaint is made, allegations are made, and seemingly years go by and nothing is ever done. And I think that's critical here, is that this is an opportunity based upon what has happened and the lack of transparency as it relates to elections in Bridgeport, and what we've seen blatantly on video, as I mentioned earlier this summer, that the days of announcing there was an investigation and then 3 or 4 years going by and everyone forgetting about it and moving on need to be over. These need to be truly investigated, and if something is found, individuals need to be prosecuted, and announcements need to be made from the proper authorities indicating what has been found. And even recommendations as to what the legislature can do to prevent something like this from happening ever again. So we have not seen that in past years when other allegations have been made. I hope the time is now where that has ended and we actually see results in a short manner as it relates to these allegations.
Yeah, Steve Harding is the guest state Senate Republican leader out of Brookfield, that part of the state. Steve, you touched on it there as far as time to investigate these things. Things I have heard, including from a couple of Democratic guests on my show here, have been twofold. Number one, expand the statute of limitations, the time frame, and two, take a look at, even though I know some people don't like it, Steve, there's some people who say, hey, if you're going to do mandatory sentencing here, you've got to give the judge a little, or whoever judges this, a little bit of leeway here. It could have been an innocent mistake. We don't want to put people in jail for a year if they just honestly screwed up. But again, please, something, Steve. Can we get something done?
Right. And that's the point, is that, you know, this is not even a case of we've seen instances in which a judge has maybe been too lenient. I mean, that is not even something that has ever occurred, because frankly, I can't remember the last case in this state in which this has actually even been prosecuted, some of the allegations that have been made. And in order for a judge to properly sentence an individual, they would need a case that's prosecuted and an investigation to be completed by the proper authorities, whether it be SEC or anywhere else in this state. And so that's really what it comes down to, is I want to see action. And what I fear by today's announcement is, like many other allegations that have been made, that announcement is made, an investigation is conducted, and years go by and nothing is ever done. And I just think that we're at a point now where I think the SEC has an obligation to the voters of this state to properly investigate this and to be fully transparent about what is found and ensure that if anyone here has conducted themselves in the manner that is being alleged, that they are properly prosecuted, and we can also take on the reforms necessary to make sure this never happens again. The voters of the state, frankly, don't deserve anything less than that.
State Senate Republican leader Steve Harding. Steve, thank you. Have a good weekend, and we'll chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
Always great. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you. Steve Harding there out of Brookfield, 30th District there, Newtown, New Milford, that part of the state. And, of course, I would be remiss if I didn't start out the program today before we get to some of the nitty-gritty of Bridgeport. Before I start with that, I must start with all the smiles and waves and hellos and high fives and thumbs up that I received today riding in the WICC vehicle from Maritime Chevrolet. And all of our folks received today from all of our other stations here at Connoisseur Media just a few hours ago in the Bridgeport St. Patrick's Day Parade. So thank you as we rode a good length down Fairfield Avenue through Black Rock into the edge of downtown, and that was cool. So thank you so much, celebrating the St. Patrick's Day holiday with the fine folks of Bridgeport and all of us here at Connoisseur Media. So thank you, thank you, thank you. A lot of folks out there with the thumbs up and the waves and say they listen to WICC every day, and for that we, of course, are eternally thank you, thankful, and thank you. All right? Now, and I beg forgiveness today. I'm a little froggy, been fighting off a cold. I think I'm past the worst of it. If I can get past 2 or 3 days without taking a day off, I think we're okay. But you will excuse me today if I'm a little froggy. All right, now to the stuff about Bridgeport on the other side of the parade stuff, which is all good and fun, and this other stuff. The Secretary of the State, Stephanie Thomas, her office has filed an election complaint with the State Election Enforcement Commission, the SEEC, and this came down today. Now, this was not completely unexpected, but when it happens, it is news, and we tell you about it. The Secretary of the State's complaint involves similar allegations to those heard last year of a person dropping multiple absentee ballots at drop boxes. The Office of Secretary of the State, Stephanie Thomas, announcing today, Friday, it's referred several possible election violations, including suspicious activity at drop boxes ahead of the most recent Bridgeport election on February 27th to election enforcement officials. Okay, this, by the way, is the story from David Altomare at the Connecticut Media. So we go on. In a letter to the SEEC, Stephanie Thomas writing that election monitors put into place to oversee the latest election discovered 8 out of 63 voters contacted in a spot check said they had received absentee ballots even though they never requested them. So again, let me read the quote again here from the story. Dave Altomare's story, Stephanie Thomas, the Secretary of the State, and her office, saying that state election monitors that were put into place to oversee the latest election, the latest round between Joe Ganim and John Gomes, 8 out of the 63 voters in a spot check. So in other words, when you do a spot check, you say, hey, let's just check around. Maybe we haven't heard any sort of, any sort of complaints here. But it's kind of like doing a random poll. So 8 out of 63 voters contacted in a spot check said they had received absentee ballots even though they never requested them. So before we go any further, let's pop up our calculator here on our trusty computer And let's find out what that percentage is. So to find out a percentage, remember that? Remember basic math here? It'll be 8 divided by 63 equals 12.7%. So in other words, the state election monitors put in, after the alleged shenanigans in round one of our four-round cha-cha with John Gomes and Joe Ganim, 8 out of the 63, or about 12.7%. said they had received absentee ballots even though they never requested them. The letter also noted another voter who told spot checkers that, quote, here's a quote from that letter, quoting again, someone came to his house to help him fill out and sign an absentee ballot and took the ballot away, unquote. Quoting again, when alerted, the Secretary of the State's office is required to send allegations of election malfeasance to SEEC for their review and to decide to investigate if any laws were broken, Thomas said. Referrals are not proof of wrongdoing, but an important step to ensure that our elections are secure. So there you go. There are allegations again now. You know, innocent till proven guilty here. But once again, the Secretary of the State filing an election complaint connected to the past Bridgeport election with the SEEC. And there is an allegation here, one of the allegations, that in a spot check of 63 voters contacted by the election monitors. So this allegation, if I'm reading this correctly, and I think I am, this allegation says that the election monitors that were put into place, remember after round one, there were election monitors put into place by the Secretary of the State's office, 8 out of the 63 voters that were consulted with a spot check, or about 12.7%, said they had received absentee ballots even though they never requested them. So, you tell me, how does that happen? Let's assume, for the sake of assumption, and for the sake of our discussion here this afternoon, kids, let's assume this is true. Now, it may not be, but for the sake of argument here, and to get this going as a discussion here, if you'd like to drop in here at 333-942-2033-3333-9422-333-WICC. You tell me. Now, again, I don't live in Bridgeport. I have told you that over and over again. I think that helps me here because I'm a neutral observer. Like I said, I'm the guy that's going to go to the game and buy a cheap seat in the upper deck way off of the face value. I'm going to go up there, and I'm going to buy an overpriced beer and a couple of overpriced hot dogs, sit there, stuff my white, pudgy, suburban face, and watch the game play out below me. So again, monitors put in place to oversee the latest election discovered 8 out of 63 voters contacted in a spot check said they had received absentee ballots, even though they never requested them. This is the problem. Now, again, let's assume that there is some veracity to this claim. There may not be. And if I see anything in the future that shows there's no veracity to this, I will make it my utmost task to tell you, hey, remember when we talked about that spot check back on Friday the 15th in March, celebrating St. Patrick's Day? Well, guess what? There was nothing to it. But here's the other question with this. You have to, I don't care how cynical you are or not, this is the kind of thing you have to ask yourself. If the sample here, at least according to what the Secretary of the State's office says here, if the sample here was 63 votes and 8 out of the 63 said, hey, in some way, shape, or form, I never asked for an absentee ballot application and I got one. How much Or absentee ballots, I'm sorry. Not absentee ballot applications. That would be bad enough. Absentee ballots, even though they never requested them. So if it's 8 out of 63, and that's 12.7%, thereabouts, if you round it up on your handy PC calculator, what would it be if the sample was 100 or 163 or 200? Now, there could be, there is a chance by the laws of statistics that this might have been a bad sample. Sampling is the key to statistics. Now, there's no word here in this story in the Connecticut Mirror, and maybe there might be more information about this that Stephanie Thomas's office doesn't want to share. But if this is to be taken that state value, on face value, that Stephanie Thomas's office says, quote, 8 out of 63 voters contacted in a spot check said that they received absentee ballots even though they never requested them. If this percentage is consistent, is that another major problem? In other words, and I'm just throwing this out there, if you know better than me and you've been around longer in Bridgeport, God bless you, I'd love to hear from you. But is this an outlier? In other words, is this 8 out of 63 people randomly surveyed in a spot check by election observers from the Secretary of the State's office? If this is raising eyebrows, how do we know? Now, maybe it doesn't happen, but you know where I'm going at here. How do we know that this isn't happening all the time? See, you got to understand, the reason that we had this problem in September is because there's video. If the video wasn't there, and we still don't know how it got there in the Gomes campaign, this could have been a he said, she said, all back and forth and back and forth. You know, the point is, and consider this. The Connecticut Mirror did a lengthy story a bunch of months ago showing that far and away Bridgeport has the highest amount, or the highest rate, I should say, of absentee ballot usage in municipal elections. It's like 23 or 24% or in the low 20s, way ahead of Hartford, way ahead of New Haven or other cities and towns in the state. Is that usage high because people are legitimately requesting them? Or, and I'm just throwing this out there, could be right, could be wrong, you don't know. Or is this a warning? Is this a warning bell here or a red warning light? Seriously. 8 out of 63 voters contacted in a spot check said they'd received absentee ballots even though they never requested them. Now, here's my question. Maybe you can help me out here. 333-9422, 333-WICC. If you have 63 voters in the spot check, and 8 of them, which is a percentage of about 12 or 13%, say, hey, I got an absentee ballot, and I never requested them, here's the basic question, and I'm literally looking for answers on this. I don't know. Who are the folks sending out these allegedly unrequested absentee ballots? You tell me.